When children were jailed during civil rights protests in Birmingham, Alabama in 1963, a local black businessman posted their bail. He also provided a safe space for leaders to strategize. And yet, the late A.G. Gaston is not as well known as other civil rights activists. Now, 60 years later, the city and the National Park Service are trying to change that. And we should note, there's a racial slur in this story. Construction workers are putting the final touches in the courtyard of the newly restored A.G. Gaston Motel in downtown Birmingham, sealing the parking lot. This site is the newest addition to the Birmingham Civil Rights National Monument, designated by President Obama in 2017 to preserve key landmarks of the Birmingham movement. Standing in the courtyard is like stepping back in time, rooms facing inward with bright orange doors and turquoise balcony rails. Park ranger Catherine Gardner points to the second floor room where the Reverend Martin Luther King Jr. stayed and rallied protesters from the balcony.
From that very spot. So it's just really incredible, all the history that unfolded here.
That room that she referred to, it was room 30. It was the war room. That's what it was called.
That's Denise Gilmore, Director of Racial Equity for the city. She calls this a place of collective memory. It was famous even before the Birmingham movement.
It opened with 32 air-conditioned rooms. Yeah. Think about that in 1954, for black people to be able to have that kind of comfort as they traveled.
Yeah, wall-to-wall carpet. It was touted as a luxury hotel, and there were very famous guests who stayed here, such as Aretha Franklin.
The city and the Park Service have teamed up to save not only this historic structure, which had been sitting idle since the 1980s, but also to honor the legacy of A.G. Gaston. He died in 1996 at 103. Arthur George Gaston was a prolific entrepreneur. The hotel was one of more than a dozen businesses he started in order to give Birmingham's black community the goods and services that were not available to them from white establishments. It all started with a burial club. An offshoot of that business is still in operation today as the Smith & Gaston Funeral Home. A nephew, Paul Gardner, is the director.
The funeral home was the basis of his empire. He also owned a business college, a nursing home, cemeteries, a bank, and radio stations.
And a pharmacy, a bottling company, and a construction firm. Gardner has fond memories going to his uncle's house to swim in the backyard pool. He says looking back, it's remarkable what Gaston achieved given the hostile climate in the segregated South. A.G. Gaston was born in a log cabin in Demopolis, Alabama, and moved to Birmingham when his mother got a job as a cook for a white family.
Dirt poor, nothing.
He had really had no shot at anything. With less than a high school education, the grandson of a slave, and he did it anyway.
That's Creola Gaston Lucas. A.G. Gaston was her grandfather. Lucas is at her niece Rochelle Malone's house, leafing through scrapbooks.
I guess we're the keeper of records. So I have various random things about him, different articles. This is from 1960, Ebony Magazine, and it has the A.G. Gaston story.
There's a letter from President Nixon praising his business acumen, a picture of Gaston with the boxer Muhammad Ali, and his army discharge papers. He served during World War I. Lucas says these papers reflect his national status, a status not acknowledged by the white powers that be in Birmingham.
My grandfather was a spokesperson for the Negro community, and he would have a meeting with Bull Connor, police commissioner of Birmingham. My grandfather said, as he entered his office, Bull Connor said, come on in here, nigger Gaston. And so I told my grandfather, my goodness, what did you do?
She figured she would have told off the notorious segregationist Bull Connor, but her grandfather explained otherwise.
He said, you have to know when you don't need to say anything, because I knew who I was.
When he left the Army, Gaston worked in Birmingham's industrial mills and sold plate lunches to his co-workers as a side gig to earn money. That's what seeded his future businesses.
He had rules, and he followed those. and he was very disciplined. He believed in the mantra of finding a need and filling that need. And there was so much needed for African Americans because of segregation.
For example, Lucas says his bank, Citizens Federal Savings and Loan, meant access to capital for the black community.
Once he got that bank started, Negroes were able to borrow money to build homes, to educate their children, and to travel, and to start their own businesses. That opened up a whole new world.
The family is pushing to have a Birmingham street named for him. Rochelle Malone sees her great-grandfather as revolutionary.
He truly is an icon. I call him a civil rights icon.
Gaston, however, was controversial in his day because of the middle ground he tried to stake out, while leaders like MLK and the Reverend Fred Shuttlesworth were the public faces of the movement, Gaston used his wealth and influence behind the scenes. Malone says that drew rebuke.
He was providing for the African-American community, but he also had a rapport with the white community. He capitalized on that to put in place the things that he needed to put in place for his people. Now, he was not always liked for that. He was looked to be an Uncle Tom.
Back at the A.G. Gaston Motel, there's a new exhibit about the man. In an archived video, he explains his position.
I was with the movement, but I just couldn't see myself getting out there provoking somebody to hit me, you know?
Birmingham's Denise Gilmore says even though he wasn't in the streets, his support sustained the movement.
Gaston bailed out so many people. I think he spent over $160,000 bailing people out. He bailed Dr. King out numerous times.
Now, she says, the motel can serve as a reminder of A.G. Gaston's legacy and what was achieved here in forcing the nation to recognize the human rights of black Americans.